and surpass penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000,000,000 kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Before we begin, I would like to do what Coben did to me. He just gave me a thing like that. It's a teaching stick. Nyong. And John is in a position to be a teacher and has agreed to come every last Tuesday of the month and share his wisdom with us. He's in the process of transmission. He's given me his brown rock suit and I have to write on it. So we haven't quite finished up, but we're very, very close. And I'm very happy that everyone will have a chance to enjoy his presence. He was a student of Coben at least as long as I was, if not longer, and was deeply trusted by Coben and ordained by him. So he is bringing that spirit to us. His name is John Lowney at the moment. I have a Dharma name. You do have a Dharma name.
I do.
Yes. You'll have to tell us in a minute. But let's do introductions around first.
Yeah.
Maddie.
Dawn.
Marie.
Ross.
Nico.
Jeffrey.
Ron.
Wendy.
John.
It's all yours.
I thought it was the following Tuesday, but surprise. It's the way seeking.
It's the way seeking.
Way seeking mind. I was speaking with Angie about this recently, and I said, oh yeah, I've been thinking about that for a long time, years. And then in the last few days, I've been reflecting on it again, and I thought, I haven't quite plumbed what I really felt, and some things bubbled up that were surprising to me about way-seeking mind in my case. And I think it begins in my early childhood with faith. My family was a devout Catholic family, and they practiced their religion with deep faith. And I grew up with that faith, and it was like air. You just breathed it in, and it was there. And it was always there, and it just went on and took it for granted. And that faith has remained with me and sustained me, and actually called me into this practice, strange as that might sound. The first actual practice introduction I had was at the age of 15, when I was turning on the TV one Saturday morning, and here on the TV was a tall, well-dressed, enrobed, English-speaking male, good-looking, deep stentorian voice, speaking about the Dharma. Now, I didn't know much about the Dharma. I read about the Beat Generation, and how that was coming along, and Ginsberg and Kerouac and all that. But I was curious about it because it was going to, in fact, my generation. I was definitely interested in it, but I didn't have time to get into it, and I didn't have the maturity either. But I was so captivated by Alan Watts that I just stood there transfixed for half an hour, and I finally sat down. And I want to think that it lasted for several hours, that TV show. Like, you couldn't have. It must have been an hour, but it seemed like it was several. But I did miss another Saturday morning with Alan Watts for quite a while. And I don't remember anything he taught me. But it was very much like Coben, where you listened and you knew it was important. And when it was over, you felt cleaned and refreshed. But you didn't know quite what was going on, what he said. You'd hear certain phrases and put them away for later review. And Watts was like that in a sense. He was more clear than Coben, quite clear. But it was a wonderful introduction to the Dharma. And I greatly appreciated it. I didn't get back in touch with Dharma for quite a while. I went through school and graduate school and getting out and getting work and dating and all that, marriage, kids, and I didn't get back to the Dharma until by accident in 1977, August. I'm a geotechnical earthquake engineer, and we have a conference, worldwide conference every 4 years in some city around the globe. And I went to the one in Mexico City in 69, and I went to the one in Moscow in 73, and I'd signed up to go to Tokyo in 77, which I did. And it was 2 weeks. The first week was the conference in Tokyo, about 1,000 in attendance. It was a wonderful presentation. This was some of my favorite profs from Berkeley over there, and it was just great to see them again. The second week was a field trip, and the Japanese researchers and profs and engineers had set up events for us to go and see and make comments and dialogue with them on their cutting edge research. And the Japanese earthquake engineering is first class. We use their work today in California. California and Japan are the leading areas for this field. So it was set up that we go to the research facilities in the morning. In the afternoon we have free for sightseeing. And there were about five trips. I signed up for one, and there were about 40 other people in the same group that had signed up with me. And one of the midday trips, we were in Nara, the sacred city in Japan. And we went out that morning and saw a facility in the mountains and whatnot. Came back and had a lovely lunch. And in the afternoon, we were taking a trip to see the sacred temple of Nara, the Thousand Deer. And I was quite interested to see this. So after lunch, we rested for a while, got back on this beautiful air-conditioned bus, and took our jackets off. We were suits and ties, and this is the mid-70s. It was ridiculous. It was 90 degrees, 90%, you know. You would not go out in that way. So we got comfortable and got out of the bus. And the walkway to the temple is composed of gravel. And it's coarse gravel, half inch to an inch and a half, about 15 foot wide walkway, pathway. And the mountain, the little hill above us, was about a mile away, a little hill, had the temple. And we were going to walk up to that. So as we started out, we were feeling jovial and happy and laughing and joshing with each other. And that went on for about 4 or 5 minutes. And then we noticed the deer the deer. The hundreds of deer were on either side of the walkway. Normally, here in the States, deer see you and they take one look and they're out of there. These deer didn't move. In fact, their eyes didn't move. Their eyes followed us. It was eerie. You had hundreds of deer stock still in the forest on either side, unmoving and watching you take every step. Well, the talk quieted down quite a bit in the group. Didn't stop, but it quieted down. And in a few more minutes, we heard the screeching. On either side, there were these thin trees, pine trees, maybe 6 to 8 inches in diameter. And the trees had no limbs. The canopy contained all the green, and that was about 100 to 120 feet up in the air. And this was the 17th year, and the billions of cicadas, crickets, were up there screeching and screaming at the top of their lungs. When we got out of the bus, it was so intense that we took it as background and kind of ignored it. And we were into ourselves. But as we walked, and it had the deer, and all of a sudden, this screeching became apparent. No one was talking. It was quiet. There was 40 pairs of feet crunching, crunching, crunching on the gravel. The deer, the crickets. This went on for 15 or 20 minutes to get up to the little temple. It was like walking into the gates of hell or eternity. I didn't know. But I knew this was really powerful. And when I get back to California, I will check this out. Which I did. Well, we got up to the temple, and it was an orange Buddha, maybe 50 to 70 feet long, lying on his side. It was kind of anticlimactic after the walk. We stayed up there a few minutes taking shots and whatnot, and then walked back. He had the same experience, but it wasn't quite the same as the first initial impression. It was a second impression of that first, and the first has never left me. So when I got back to California, I started searching for a teacher. And I had spent some time in spiritual practice and looked in Ananda's ashram in Oakland for a week or more. And did Sufi work in Palo Alto and San Fran for some time. But I knew that didn't call me. And I knew that what I experienced in Nara did call me. So I was looking for a Zen teacher, Japanese Zen teacher. And I had heard that there was one newly moved into the area. But I couldn't find out who he was, where he was, or what his name was. I'd run into people in a bookstore. Oh yeah, he's somebody here, but no, I don't know where, I don't know how to get to him. I don't know his name. Don't know how to contact him. This went on for months, about 6 months, until January, when I came across a notice. There was a bookstore in Palo Alto in the 70s on University Avenue, a very nice bookstore. And in the back they had another bookstore called the Seed Center. And you entered through this little doorway and with drapes there, and had a little notice above it, Seed Center. And back there they had armchairs, they had coffee, and they had spiritual practice books all over the place, and encourage you to go in and sit down, read them. If you liked them, you could buy one. If you didn't want to buy it, sit there and read it and have a coffee. It was the 70s in Palo Alto. Nothing like that now. It was a wonderful place. I spent many hours in there. Well, one day I noticed a little new notice up on the board. Soto Zen Sitting Group started downtown Palo Alto. Byron Street. It was Tuesday or Wednesday evening. And I said, oh boy, that's it. I'll go over there and find out how to find this Japanese teacher. So the next meeting I went over, it was Phil Olson, Coben's Jisha. And of course, Coben knew that Phil was starting a group in Palo Alto and encouraged it. So I sat with Phil there for a few weeks until I found out where Coben was, and started sitting over at Haiku Zendo in Los Altos in February of 78. In the first meeting there, I got there early and I was sitting up on the tan on the long side of the wall. It's a garage with a tan all the way around. And I was sitting on the long side of the wall against the wall. And about 3 minutes past seven, I feel a slight breeze on the back of my neck. No noise, not a sound. I didn't know what that was, because when people come in to a group like that, they usually make some noise and shuffling and this and that. Didn't happen this time. Well, the bell rang after the meditation period, and I turned around slowly, and there was Coben up in the tan. And I had never met, never seen a man so aware. So aware and present, yeah, present in my life as Coben up on a tan that evening. He was like a cobra. He was there like a, he was sitting like a cobra. And within 5 seconds, I felt a deep click in my stomach. And I said to myself, there's my teacher. And I never lost that feeling. I've always had that feeling deep in me. He's my root teacher. And so I practiced with him every week and started my home practice twice a day. I should mention that that same meeting, I met Angie that evening that I met Coben. And it was very obvious to me that Angie was Coben's senior disciple. It was completely clear, even to a newcomer. So I took note of that as well, and I think we spoke a bit shortly. But I started practicing with him, and started my home practice, and bought Zabatan. And it was difficult at first, because I would sit, and I'd get so exhausted, I'd just roll off the Zafu and take a nap, actually, for 20 or 30 minutes. It was so exhausting for about 6 months, like I threw that, whatever it was, resistance, I don't know what that was, but I just worked my way through it. And continued seeing Coben and doing the practice and doing some shishins at Black Mountain. There was a hostel up there that we used to do shishin at. Boy, they were cold.
Hidden Villa.
Hidden Villa, yes, thank you. Hidden Villa. God, it's cold Harahatsu. On the cold store, we had one fireplace and about five or six rooms. The cabins were unheated, but it was good practice, very good practice. And we continued like that for, as I say, 11 years, and until I decided somehow that I needed to be ordained. I wanted ordination. So I contacted Coben, and he was down in Mexico at that point, And he came up in a couple of weeks. He drove over and we talked, and we talked again, and he didn't want me taking Jukai. He wanted me taking priest ordination. And I didn't think I was ready for that. I had three school-age kids. Soul, mature parent, you might say. And I didn't think I had the freedom to do that. But he'd have none of it. And I went back and forth for quite a while on this, and it got quite animated, which I had never seen him get before. We finally quieted down, and I mistakenly took it that he gave in. And he didn't. So he went ahead and ordained me a priest. And I found out later, I thought it was Jukai, no, it was priest. Because we had bowls. You know, so so it was going. But yeah. So yeah, he was my teacher, and still a very important impact in my life. I went on to study, Copeland spent a lot of time in New Mexico at that point, and I went on to study with other teachers after that, Soto Rinzai mostly, and finished with that last one about 4 years ago, maybe five, at Zen Mountain Monastery. Did part of an angle there. And that work, mostly koan work and sitting, was important. Some was in haiku, was the art they selected. Copeland's art was calligraphy, and I studied that with him, and that was very beneficial and productive, wonderful experience. Really opened me up as to how Copeland taught the teaching of no teaching, the teaching of manifestation, and the deep nuance when you paint from hara, but don't tell anybody. You have to pick it up. It's not easy. So it's a wondrous experience, and still continuing. And I'm grateful for the opportunity here with Angie, whom I deeply respect and revere, and have for many, many decades. And so it continues.
Questions?
Please.
What kind of research were you doing in Japan?
They were doing earthquake engineering and geotechnical engineering. It was a combination. Studying a seismic response of buildings. the Gata had occurred. But after that, but it was a time of deep concern about earthquakes in California and Japan. Still is.
So when did you finally figure out that you were ordained as a priest?
Well, I was at Chikoji a few years ago and talking to Ellen Richter, one of Angie's priests, and I was chatting about this and that, and I don't know how the subject of my ordination came up, but I mentioned about the bowls that Copeland gave me, and she says, bowls? I think you said Jukai. I said, yeah, we have the bowls there. She said, no, you didn't do Jukai. Oh, I looked
so you
it up.
Were like Harry Potter with the secret power, wizarding powers that you didn't really know.
It was a Harry Potter moment. And it was a big surprise, so I went home and checked the book that Coben referred me to, actually, for priestly duties. This was all covered by him in our talks. And I didn't make the connection. I thought he gave in. But, yeah, the bowls are in there. They're not for Jukai. So.
So I have another question. So are you going to learn all the... So you don't really have all the priestly forms, like... Kala does, right? Or maybe you do, right? Like walking around the altar and the incense and all that sort of thing. I know that we watched Paula pick up for Angie in that. So is that your thing as well?
I've done that at Jikoji. I gave a few talks up there and did some of that. But yeah, that's something I've got to pick up. I have to confess that I have a resistance to forms and ritual from my Catholic background, and contrary wise, I have a deep attraction to essence of Dharma. So I work on that and try to bring those two into resonance.
Yeah. So I have a talk of Angie's I will share with you, because we're transcribing a bunch of her talks to put them in a book, and one of them is exactly about that resistance to form. So I'll pass that along.
Thank you.
She had it too.
same.
Yes, John.
I just want to thank you. There was some welling up for me too, because I grew up in Los Altos and had a very similar experience with Coben when I was about 16 years old at Haiku Zendo.
Uh-huh.
And met him and went to his house and was deeply moved by him.
Mm.
So it's wonderful to see you here and to hear your stories, and I so look forward to your sharing your knowledge and your insight.
Thank you. I happened to meet his mother, and that was really something. She was such a wonderful, kind, loving woman that you could just see where Coben got the way he was from her gentle nature, loving this marvelous. Yes, Jeffrey.
John, I'm looking forward to the last Tuesdays of every month. You're coming for these moments.
All right. Thank you.
This is a real departure, or a change, or watching the flow of floating Zendo move. Yeah. Merrily. I'm really looking forward to it.
Excuse me.
So I'm pretty new here, so this is my first day. So what exactly will I be learning here?
What will you be learning here?
Yes.
Ah, that's a wonderful question. Wonderful question. What will you be learning here? Well, this is the study of the self. You start with yourself and we expand from that. But it's not a didactic learning that you pick up concepts and words and things and that. It's learning how to sit. It's learning your breath and your posture and your movement, prostrations and chanting, and see where that takes you.
So when you say chanting, like what exactly, like if I'm really concentrating, and what exactly should I be chanting?
Well, the chanting, we chanted the Heart Sutra, which is the essence of our whole practice in one sutra. If you chant that every day, you will be amazed. That resonates in our body, in our bones, in our marrow, deeply. There's nothing else to learn. That Heart Sutra has what you have to have. So there's not a whole lot of scurrying around to find out what you need to do. It's well within your control.
Another question. So when I'm really concentrating and trying to see my breath, or like trying to just take my thoughts away, and I build up saliva, how do I get rid of that? Is there any,
I have to confess that I have a hearing problem. So I have this. Could you repeat that again,
sure,
please?
Absolutely. So when I'm really trying to concentrate, to see my breath and or trying to avoid any negative thought, so I build up saliva. How do I get?
Well, you build up what?
Saliva.
Saliva.
Oh, saliva. Oh, yes.
So
is
there any technique to place your tongue,
Yes, you put your tongue in the back of your teeth.
Okay.
And that will help. And keep your chin tucked back in. So the back of the neck is an extension, not contraction. And you'll help that. But it's impossible to come up with a completely dry mouth. You'll have some moisture in there.
So, when I fully concentrate, it just takes me away, just a little bit of saliva, it's just I'm, back to normal.
You just swallow it.
Swallow it?
Yeah, just let it flow down.
Okay.
Just organic, be organic, let it flow.
Okay.
And the negative thoughts come in, just let them go. Don't wrestle with them.
Just about 8 o'clock. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you, Angie.
We have a lot to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Are there announcements?
Announcements. We need someone to open on April 10th. And so our full day, our half day sit is on our calendar.
Is the calendar out there, or
yeah,
the calendar?
Yeah, I have one in my purse. But
okay.
I really want to
could be either the 6th or the 13th, according to my calculations.
So it's the 14th.
13th.
That's when we'll observe Buddha's birthday.
Okay.
In some way or another. Yeah. Half day sit.
But the 10th is a Tuesday where you need an opener? Is that
right.
Okay.
Right.
I'd be happy to do it. I just don't have a key, or I have the old key. It looks like they changed the lock on the door. It's been a while.
I'll give you one tonight.
Okay. I'll make a note on my iPhone for the 10th Tuesday.
I'll remind you too.
Yes.
Thank you, Tom.
Great.
have a quick announcement. First, I come with greetings from Jokoji, and a week from yesterday begins the Kanjo Ace session, and we're all invited to attend if you can, any part of it, you know, one or more days. And that's basically it. It runs from Monday through the following Sunday. And I believe Mike Newhall, Doug Jacobson, and Eric Remington will be alternating teaching duties. And Mark Jokoji.
And the Shuso ceremony is at
the end. And the Shuso ceremony will be on the Saturday the 7th,
is it?
Yes, that will be for Eric Remington, who this week is completing his Shuso Kiryu. I may not know all the terminology perfectly well here, but we're completing the Ongo period. We had a lovely weekend with a Dharma walk into nature built around Eric last weekend. That was very successful, very nice. So come out to Jokoji if you're so inclined.
Yes. Eric is another Koban student from long, long, long ago. And so this is also a very special occasion for him.
Yes, it is.
After all these years.
Hearing John's talk about going all the way back, I hear similar things from Eric all the time.
Yes.
And so it just feels very, it's nice to have the back and forth. For me personally, between Jokoji and down here is very nice.
Yes. It all belongs.
It all belongs, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Well, let's have our 1 minute sit.
The numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.